following podcast is edited from the live Voices of Montana program, Montana's original statewide radio talk show that's heard Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. The show has been airing for more than 20 years. Contact your local radio station if you'd like to hear the program live in your area and it's currently not available. The show is also streamed live on voicesofmontana.com. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program, inviting you to contact us with comments or show ideas. The email address is studio@voicesofmontana.com.
All right, water flowing again in the St. Mary's Canal. I mean, for me, this was mid-May when Drop 5 collapsed. And if you saw pictures of it, we put them up on our Facebook page. I mean, it was a total collapse. T-O-T-A-L. Completely. Spelled C-O-M-L. Anyway. And they've got water running again. So that's pretty dang cool that that's the case. And Jen Patrick will join us a bit later on. As I mentioned in the opening here, we looked at this issue a while back. And this is the Big Sky Country National Heritage Area proposal. It involves all of Cascade County. We're going to recycle this again because I've been taking a number of phone calls regarding it and suggestions to cover this. Well, we've done it this way. I had Commissioner Weber on. She's a proponent of that proposal with Cascade County. And then an opponent on who was Jen Dodd. I think her Facebook page is Boone or Boondoggle or something to that effect. I'm calling it land grab or bonus money. But I spoke with, as I mentioned, a couple of landowners. One of them's Ray Grukowski, and she joins us now. Ray, how you doing? Good morning, ma'am.
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thanks for having us here today.
And would you introduce Janet Thayer for us?
Janet Thayer is a Belt citizen who has helped me out with presentations. My adjective for her is words. She's done a wonderful research on some on history of NHAs and very loud speaker for our group. Janet Thayer from Belt, Montana.
Janet, how you doing?
I'm doing well this morning. Thank you. Thanks, Ray, for the introduction.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for being here. Buzzed by Belt the other day. I want to spend a little bit of time in that town if I can, but we just came back from Great Falls. Good. And I know Cascade County is, of course, this is the entirety of Cascade County. So you've done some research on this. Can you sum up? I can say the proponents think that it's going to bring money for necessary infrastructure or other kinds of heritage and cultural improvements. And opponents say this is a land grab. It's another level of government and it will usurp property rights. So what does your research tell you about national heritage areas?
If you look at the federal landscape right now in terms of national heritage areas, there's a lot going on with that right now. After a moratorium that started about the end of 2008 through 2019, 6 new heritage areas have been created. There's currently 55. And with the moratorium lifted, there are lots of designations, quote unquote, waiting in the wings. And at first glance, they sound okay. They sound like a valid way to bring some funding into a community. The devil is always in the details or in the fine print, and national heritage areas are not any different. When you look at the fine print or at the federal level, the lack of fine print, therein lies the real problem. There is not any definition that makes any sense. I get no visual that the current definition through the Park Service describes national heritage areas or NHAs as places where historic, cultural, and natural resources combine to form cohesive, nationally important landscapes. I have no idea what that means. I don't know really what that looks like. I don't know what that does to my private property. And those things have not been defined. And that is a problem that's being discussed currently in both our United States House of Representatives as well as the Senate chambers. There are 2 pieces of legislation, 1 House resolution and 1 Senate bill pending right now in regard to national heritage areas because of the unanswered questions.
I want to come back to you in a minute and talk about the public involvement, because as I looked at, and thank you, by the way, Ray, for sending me these resources, I looked at some of the steps that are involved in determining this area, and public involvement is a huge part of that, but I'm not sure that that has been the case because I'm getting a lot of questions regarding this. But Ray, you're a landowner in this area. Talk about your concerns.
Oh, well, I first learned about it in mid-July, just happenstance. I was at a meeting, and I didn't understand what it was. So I did do a research, and I still couldn't comprehend that it was happening. I didn't, again, understand. So I made some phone calls, and I was told that there wasn't a lot of opposition. Yes, this is happening, but there's not a lot of opposition. So didn't take anything to realize that it was because the people affected didn't know. At that time, the feasibility study was about to conclude on August 15. It would conclude. At that time, there was 1,474 exchanges between people, citizens, and the Big Sky Country National Heritage Area Corporation. There is 83,000 people in the county affected. So less than one, and some of those were duplicative exchanges of the 1,474 through their meetings. So 1.7% of the population had been notified. Definitely not enough awareness and exchange of information for the people that were affected.
And another part of this, too, as we'll come back and take a break, or we'll come back after this break here. Got some headlines upcoming here. But public support and commitments are a big part of this. So Ray Grakulski is with us. Janet Thayer, the topic is this Big Sky Country National Heritage Area proposal for Cascade County. Is it a land grab or is it bonus money? Water in the St. Mary's Canal, that could come a bit later on. Tom Schultz here, Voices of Montana, along with Janet Thayer, a Belt citizen opposed to the Big Sky Country National Heritage Area, along with Ray Grakulski. She's a landowner in Cascade County. And Janet, let's go back to you as we have about, looks like 4 minutes left here in this segment. We'll have a little bit of time on the other side to continue. You talked about some of the devils being in the details. Is there specific areas, national heritage areas across the country that have experienced, perhaps, for lack of a better word, abuse of the rules, a violation of what we would say as our private property rights?
National heritage areas, the conversations happening at the federal level mirror conversations from congressional testimonies when the national parks were created. And so you do have to give pause and think about land grab, eminent domain. There have been instances, and it's not a federal eminent domain. It's local cities deciding that a particular building or area in a community is blighted and needs to be repurposed if to improve economic development. So, for instance, we have actually seen that happen in West Virginia, and that was battled all the way to the Supreme Court of West Virginia, and thankfully the people there were committed to their cause and they did win on an appeal from a lower court ruling. But yes, there is abuse. The River People in Louisiana, I would suppose that they would be part of the history and the culture and the national resource that they're trying to preserve. The Riverboat People of Louisiana are no more. They have been removed because of the designation of the National Heritage Area.
Really?
I'm going to ask you, Janet, if I can, about the mineral rights. I have to hear that one again, too. In a presentation we made recently, that landowner with mineral rights expecting to retire. Do you remember that piece that you presented?
Yes, this was in North Dakota. This was in North Dakota, which is a really shining example of a heritage area put together without adequate public support, knowledge of the residents. The heritage area was signed into law in 2009 by President Obama, and legislation passed like it had been on track here. Nobody really knew about it. But once passed, there was a landowner in the area who had been offered a coal lease to develop resources on his land, and the company that had previously been going to produce coal withdrew their lease because of the increased restrictions that would be in place because of the National Heritage Area.
Understood. Mm. Is part of this a management issue?
It is a management issue, and who gets to decide who's going to manage my land, for instance? My husband and I are very responsible stewards of the land that we own, and is this self-appointed and self-anointed board that presently exists, by no one's authority, do they have the right to manage people's public or people's private lands? the tenet of National Heritage Areas that they are supposed to be grassroots initiatives. 1,500 people over 5 years is not a real grassroots citizen voice initiative. There's a petition to oppose that has been circulating, and in its first 2 weeks of circulation, it gained 1,500 signatures and is over 2,500 signatures, I think approaching perhaps 3,000 now. So in my mind, we need to learn from North Dakota, and we need to take a step back, and we need to have some conversations of this designation for our particular area.
And those conversations have been happening. And I think, Ray, as you will come back, Ray Grukalski, Janet Thayer, we're talking about the Big Sky Country National Heritage Area proposal for Cascade County. We'll talk about that organized opposition, and even coming from public officials and other groups. So back with more Voices in a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
Getting into the public support, was there enough? Was the involvement broad-based? As we look at the Big Sky Country National Heritage Area proposal for Cascade County. And welcome back. On the on deck, I should say, is Jen Patrick with the Milk River Joint Board of Control. She's the program manager and I'm going to say task master in getting, if she's okay with that, she'll be on in just a little bit, in getting all the work done. As we talked about mid-May, drop five, complete collapse of the St. Mary's Canal. And now there is water flowing again. They updated drop two. They got five cleared up, built a new one. And they're testing structural integrity and all that going on here. That's going to be cool to talk about in just a little bit. We are with Ray Grukalski and Janet Thayer. They are property owners who'd be affected by this BSCNHA proposal. Ray, I wanted to have you finish up or at least talk. Well, as a matter of fact, let's go to Casey. Casey is listening in Great Falls. I'm sure we'll have some concerns. 1450 AM KQDI. Casey, what's your question? Good morning to you, sir.
Yeah, good morning. This interests me a lot. I've been developing land in Cascade County for 25 years or so. Yeah. And every time you go through the process, there's another level and layer of complexity and regulations that they've dreamed up or added to it. And this is another one that's even more befuddling because it will be considered in the mix when the planners and the city officials and the county officials are having their hearings, making their decisions on how to develop your land. One of the first things I learned when I got the property and started developing, your private land, so-called, is not really that private anymore. You have more and more and more regulations. And that's one of the beauties of Trump that people don't accentuate enough, is he has attempted to cut through the weeds and have just reasonable and logical ordinances and regulations, get rid of the ones that are really burdensome and troubling to the economy.
Casey,
so my issue on this, my viewpoint on this issue comes from experience. Every time you go through, it gets more expensive. And all that cost is adds cost. Time is money.
Let me ask you this question. As a land developer there, when did this get on your plate? Were you a part of this public process, the 1,474 exchanges, the 1% of the population? When did you know about this?
Well, I've known about this for several years. The way they add these levels of complexity to your process is they do it very veiled, very low-key, very background, and oftentimes the public doesn't get engaged until it's almost too late, if not too late. Then it's just a limited people that get involved, and sometimes they look at those as the kook fringe, and they're just selfish and thinking about their own nest.
Appreciate the call, Casey, and great experience, a great phone call. Great to piggyback off of that, Ray. Some thoughts there, and then also talk about this now more and more organized opposition to this proposal.
Yeah, more awareness. So it started with a letter-writing campaign. We asked individuals or citizens to write letters to city council, county commissioners, and our constituents, Dane's tester, Gianforte. That way we covered it if it got to Congress, and we covered what would be the beginning of meetings to take a step back and halt any more movement at our level here locally. And so through letter writing, we're gaining some meetings with council. We do have yet to tackle the commissioners, but we hope that will be something that they'll understand a lot better after our meeting on our gathering on October 15th, which I'll tell you about in a minute. But we've got some, so it's a lot of attending meetings. There's a lot of bodies that are engaging. We've spoke to the Great Falls Realtors Association and the Cascade Conservation District and the Farm Bureau, both in Scioto County and Cascade County. Those folks are on board. And right now there's a lot of stock growers, wool growers. Right now there's a lot of annual meetings happening, national annual meetings, state as well for those organizations. So they will take those to their state level and gain, we feel really good about gaining resolutions to oppose. Again, those are documents that will bring forward to the representatives in Congress in case this slips by us and the Big Sky Country National Heritage Area. And right now the complement with creating awareness is stopping the movement, also stopping and sitting back so that we can get everybody involved that is involved and make that a fair shake. On the 15th of October, we have, through the links of communications, talking with people, we have engaged a member of a previous initiative in Colorado. Norman Kincaid is a PhD down there, and he retired some years back and went, he retired into Rocky Ford, Colorado, and he joined a historical society there. He was a member. And he was working on some projects within that group. Unbeknownst to him, for 4 years, he was part of a group that was trying to establish a National Heritage Area. When he discovered that, he went to the opposed side, and they did that defeat that initiative in 2014.
When and where's that meeting?
This meeting happens Thursday, October 15, beginning 7 p.m., and at the King's Arena. We'll have a few presenters that evening, and it's all about information on NHAs and experiences with designations. You won't want to miss that, and we do invite proponents and opponents alike.
All right, Ray.
Let's get knowledgeable about this thing.
Great, and thank you guys for being active on this. I've reached out to Commissioner Jane Weber, as I mentioned. She was on the program a while back, and now we're going to have her back on the 19th. Janet Thayer and Ray Rukowski, thank you guys so much, and we'll be interested in following along with this, okay? That's October 15th, 7 p.m. at King's Arena to get more and more educated on this, both pro and con. Thank you too very much.
Great. Thank you, Tom.
Thank
have a
you.
Good day.
Yeah, great job.